Cappers, what's up? It is Thursday, March 7th. Hope everybody's doing well. We are nearing the end of the week. This may be the last Daily Tap of the week. I think I'll be doing one on Saturday, but you never know, man. You just got to keep that option open. I can't make promises my ass can't keep. I will tell you that championship week plus the NCAA tournament, we will be doing a lot more podcasts, especially if Wisconsin and Marquette go far. As for Marquette right now, I don't know if they are going to go fast the first round of the tournament. It is bad. So we're going to start there. And we'll talk also about John Kuhn retiring, and we'll talk a little Brewers to wrap up the show. But let's start with Marquette. So, you know, we were on this podcast on Monday, basically, hey, did Marquette peak too early? Is the problems with the turnovers? I hadn't seen anything like it. They look sluggish. They look slow. So I knew this Seton Hall game wasn't going to be easy. I came into it thinking, all right, well, I'm very nervous for this game. This is, you know, Seton Hall needs this to get off the bubble. They need a good win against a quad one team, quad two team in Marquette. So could they get it done? Now, I kind of was very impressed with Marquette in the first half. And you're like, well, how could you be impressed with a team that turned the ball over 14 times? Well, they were up 6 points. When you turn the ball over 14 times and a half, you're usually not winning the half. Like, if you are, maybe you're up by one or two. Marquette was up by six. That's how good a defense they played in the first half. They held, see, if they turn the ball over half that amount, if they turn the ball over seven times, this game is a blowout. They are up at least 10 at half, if not more. Then they get tight yet again in the last part of the game. Charles Pierce, famed writer, noted Marquette fan, had this stat, and I believe it's from someone else, but he was the one I saw it from. Marquette is 46-9. That is the score that opponents have done against Marquette in the last 5 minutes of the games, the last three games, last three losses. So it clearly ends up asking the question, what the fuck? What the fuck is going on with this team? And I don't know where to peel back this onion. I feel like this onion is a big one, and I feel like we have to start in a variety of places to sort of get in the head of this Marquette collapse right now. And is it fixable? And I think that's the second part of this. So, number one, I think Marquette wasn't ready to get punched in the mouth. We chat about the podcast every now and again about how teams sometimes do not know how to react when they get hit with something surprising. Marquette only had lost to St. John's all year in the Big East. And Marquette said, we can kind of beat everybody. We're not afraid of anybody. We've had some close encounters, and we've pulled them out. The Creighton game, the Georgetown game, the Seton Hall game, the first Seton Hall game, all those games could have been losses for Marquette. They were wins. So then when they go to Villanova and they're up late, they kind of expected it to be the same. It wasn't. They kind of crumble last second. They can't get any points going. They end up losing to Villanova, and it's kind of like this, what the fuck? It blows them back a little bit. So then you go into the Sunday afternoon game against Creighton, and they come out sort of hungover. I'm not saying they were hungover. I know that you may interpret that because the Shamrock Shuffle was going on. They were hungover from that Villanova loss. I think they were still stunned that they had lost to Villanova. It was almost like they were going at the media timeouts, and you know, Theo John was reaching over to Ed Mora and be like, "Can you believe we lost to Villanova? It's wild, man, right? Like crazy. Like it's like they couldn't get over that fact." Even though that they still had a command, they still could win outright the Big East title. That to me was not, either the coaches did a bad job of really refocusing this team, or that they've lost this mental edge. And that's the scary thing. So Marquette, you know, Steve Wojciechowski has said a few times this year, these were games that we won that we didn't in the last 2 years. This has looked more like the last 2 years of Marquette basketball than this early part of the season. Why is that? What's part of the problem? Is it the Marcus Howard foul problem? Now, some people are ready to blame Marcus Howard. And look, I get it. I understand it. Marcus Howard has been downright awful in these last three games. I would say the Villanova and Seton Hall examples. Let's take out Creighton. That, to me, is a comment on Howard was out for most of the set for this latter part of the game. Wojciechowski brought him in, and he tried to do too much. Marcus Howard feels like he can turn the light on at any moment, and he wants to get his. It's very Rousey-like. He has become a little bit like Andrew Rousey in that sense. And that was one of the things that I think drove Marquette fans nuts about Andrew Rousey, is Andrew Rousey, no matter what, no matter the situation, no matter the game flow, always had to get his. Marcus Howard, unless it was a open shot, it was in rhythm, there is no fucking reason he should have been taking a shot away from guys like Sam Hauser and Morrow, who is in sporadically and playing a really good game. Sakar Anum, for that matter. He didn't really score much, but he did a lot. More on him in a second. So Howard should not have even touched the basket. I mean, he could touch it, but he should have been looking the pass. He needs to work on that part of his game. Now, some may say, is this team better without Howard? I don't buy into that. Howard has bailed Marquette out of so many different games this year. If it's not for Howard, do they beat Buffalo? If it's not for Howard, do they beat Creighton? If it's not for Howard, do they beat... There's a variety of teams. We can go look at the different games that Marcus Howard has a direct impact. Do they beat Villanova the first time if they don't have Howard? Remember, he had like 21 of their first 30 points. Like, I think you got to take a step back. Like, I understand that Howard's been trash in these games. I get it. But at the same time, he is still a vital part of this team. He just needs to readjust either his game, or Marquette needs to put him in better situations because teams have figured him out. And it's unfortunate that teams have figured him out. I think that a summer of work, he can kind of get it back and sort of figure out, all right, how do I defend? How do I, you know, make my game when they're throwing bodies at me just left and right? How do I get free? How do I make that happen? But right now, I don't think he knows how to do that. And I think he's out of time. I just don't think there's enough time for him to adjust his game like that. I don't think it happens overnight. He is a special talent, and maybe it does. But he has to get unlocked at some point, and Marquette's going to have to try some new things. So I think that's part of the problem. Another part of the problem is Joey Hauser. Joey Hauser had a really strong start to the Big East season. And whether Joey's fatigued, whether he is just not confident, or he just seems shook. So whatever has Joey Hauser shook, he needs to snap out of it. Right now, I don't think Joey Hauser is a starter. I think Joey Hauser has regressed significantly. Even late in the game, they're breaking a press and he picks the ball up right before half court. Like, who does that? He's step in three from like 40 out. What's going on here? I just think he needs like a mental timeout, and he needs to kind of maybe come off the bench and make himself flourish. So the changes I would make for this Georgetown game, it would be twofold. One, I'd have Sakar Anum run point. I think Sakar Anum did a really good job at point guard. I think he struggled out the gate. I think he was a little nervous, but I think he needs to come out and do that. Number two, and have Marcus Howard off the ball. And have Marcus Howard have more chances to create, more chances to run around, and see if he can make things happen. And I know he's a creator, but he's going to have to take a step back because they're going to have to do something different. The other one is start Brendan Bailey. Brendan Bailey showed a little bit. He was one of the bright spots, I think, in this game. 8 points, most points he's had since Georgetown. This had a similar feel to it, right? Because Marcus Howard didn't play. Sam Hauser went off. He was great. So why didn't, you know, it could have Howard sat on the bench for the entire second half. And I think if you're Steve Wojciechowski, you have to consider it. And, you know, Craig Gard did that to Ethan Happ. And it wasn't the most, I don't think Ethan Happ was happy about it, but he sat him on the bench down the stretch because Happ was just a wreck. And Wojo should have done that with Marcus Howard. And I don't know if it's the players coach thing with Wojo. I don't know if it's his relationship with Marcus Howard. I don't know if they're worried about his psyche. But Wojo should have had enough balls to say, all right, you're sitting the rest of the game. We just can't have you out there. You will be back. You'll be in the lineup on Saturday, but we just can't have it. And I hope you understand that it's for the good of the team. But he didn't do that. Instead, he ran Howard out there, and Howard had 6 points. Howard should be embarrassed by his performance tonight. And I know he probably is, but still, it's just maddening to watch something like that happen. So yes, Sakar at the point, Brendan Bailey in the starting lineup. I think those are your first things. The number three sort of thing on this, just play basketball. Don't fucking worry about making mistakes. Did Marquette in the first half looked like a team who was just scared to make mistakes, that they were just scared and skittish to make errors. Yet they did not, and that's what led to the turnovers early on, and that's what led to them playing like shit. So just go out there and have fun. Don't fucking worry about making the right pass. Just do your job and play your game. And look, if winning heals all wounds. If they can beat Georgetown by 10 or more, I mean, I'll just take a win. Doesn't matter. But if they say, let's say they cut down on their turnovers, they have a big win against Georgetown to wrap up the season, they only lose 2 games all year at the Fiserv Forum, I think people will feel a little bit better, a tinge better about their chances coming into the final, the Big East tournament. Madison Square Garden has not been a place that has been kind to Marquette, even when they were in the prior Big East. So they barely got to the semifinals. It is a trouble spot for them. But at the same time, I do think that getting that time to have a bunch more practices and getting sort of back into it, it is fixable. I'm not going to say right now that I think Marquette can get out of the first game of the tournament. I really don't. But I know this team has it in them. I've seen it. I've seen it all year. This is just a bad valley. They can peak again. They can. And maybe they did peak too early. Maybe what I talked about on Monday was absolutely right. They peaked too early and it's over. And they're just out of gas. And this is going to be a very disappointing end to the year. And a lot of questions around, did Wojo burn them out? Was there not enough? Like, what needs to happen? Marquette's not going to, like, go away. Like, Kobe McEwen's coming next year. Greg Elliott will be back. I mean, they're going to have a very good guard play next year along with Marcus Howard if he returns. And so I'm not really that worried about the future of Marquette basketball. Some might be, though. So we'll see. Well, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about Marquette Georgetown on the watch list tomorrow. Moving to the Packers. So John Kuhn is now officially retired. Remembering Kuhn well, the great Kuhn chants. And people forget that he was a starting running back at one point for the Packers when they were completely out of running backs. He was great. 2-time Pro Bowler, fan favorite, local hero. I think that there was a lot of love for John Kuhn. And I think John Kuhn retiring as a Packer is really cool. I think he has a future in Green Bay, Milwaukee, whatever. He's going to be a force. Like, he obviously kind of wants to get into that broadcasting realm. I think he's a good fit. I heard him on ESPN Wisconsin with Jason Wilde. Yeah, it was Jason Wilde. With Jason Wilde last Friday, and he brought up some really good points about Jason Witten and Jason Witten coming back, and he's saying, yeah, my body's probably not there. And Wilde actually asked him if he filed his papers. And then Kuhn decides this week to retire. So did Jason Wilde, local reporter, bully John Kuhn into signing his retirement papers? Some people are saying. But in all seriousness, I think Kuhn is one of those guys that we'll always remember as part of the Packer legacy, I guess, for this generation. the Aaron Rodgers generation. There are certain players that, you know, you could place in the either their Favre or Rodgers category. And Kuhn is obviously a no-brainer Aaron Rodgers guy. And just all the love that Rodgers showed him throughout the years, in just some memorable moments. I think Noel Murphy was saying today how he has a Kuhn jersey, number 30. I think Kuhn memorabilia, like a John Kuhn signed picture or something like that, I think that's kind of a fun thing to have, right? Like, I think that's a cool, like, man cave thing. I it's not worth anything. Like, I'm not going to go over to Jeff Sports, plug in a lot of ESPN Wisconsin things. Murph, cash them checks, baby. Just call me up. But anyways, I'm not going to call Jeff Sports and be like, hey, I have an autographed John Kuhn. What's that going for? And no way is he giving me shit for that. But still, I think that's a cool man cave collection, right? Like, if this was a gift from me to you and I said, here is a John Kuhn autographed picture, and it's like him doing a Lambo leap or something, you like it. Like, you're not going to say no to that for me, right? Like, yeah, come on. He's not a nobody, right? Packers also signed Fadero Brown to a one-year deal. He showed some flashes at D-line last year, played really good against the Bears, so they signed him to a futures deal. Just thought worth noting, a little hot, little quick take for you. All right, moving to baseball. So Jeremy Jeffers got shut down after three pitches because of a lingering shoulder problem. That is big old yikes. That is a little worrisome if you are the Milwaukee Brewers. Jeffers does kind of go full bore. He doesn't really fuck around. And maybe he thought he was healthy and he wasn't, and he needs to keep his shoulder on ice. Who knows if this means a DL stint. We are fastly approaching opening day. We will now be 3 weeks away today. So, you know, whether that means that he goes on the injured list, not the disabled list, so we don't offend anybody. If he goes on the injured list and he gets shut down, that I think is a real possibility. We'll see. I hopefully it's nothing serious. Obviously, if it's serious, that is a major blow to the Brewers. The Brewers really didn't have a lot of injury issues in their pitching staff besides Jimmy Nelson and Brett Suter. So hopefully it is not something serious, not something that's going to keep him out for very long, and it's just going to be something that he can come back to. I think he's just dealing with sort of a weak arm, and he tried to probably push it a little too far, and it just got out of control. That's what I'll say from an optimistic perspective. If it's the pessimistic and his shoulder's completely fucked, well, then I think a carefully placed call to Craig Kimbrel might not be the worst idea. Also, kind of wrap up the show, I thought it was really interesting. Tom Hargecourt wrote a piece today basically outlining that the Brewers players met with their union today and they are not happy. They have sent some concerns about that things are going on. And, you know, Tony Clark said this on Wednesday morning talking to the Brewers. Concerns continue to be high, Clark said. It was high before Manny and Bryce signed. While we're glad they did, there are a number of others still at home and out of jobs that clubs can help with. It's a voices of concern I've had for the last year plus. There are players available on the market that help teams be successful in the field aren't given the opportunity to do so. So obviously Mike Moustakas is one of those guys who, you know, didn't really get paid. He, you know, he took a kind of a weak deal with the Brewers, and the collective bargaining agreement doesn't come up till after the 2021 season. So to lock out, you know, that would definitely be that would be the day. But if they decided to go on strike or something like that, they could do it now. And they could say, all right, you know what, we're out. And I don't know if they can. I think what's, you know, kind of working the Clark's disadvantage is the fact that Manny and Bryce got paid what they did. I think I've said this before, and I'll say it again. Baseball's in a really tough spot because I think Scott Boras does not understand how the landscape works anymore. I think Scott Boras is fucking up for a lot of people. Ever since listening to Ryan Rosillo talk about that, I think he is so spot on with how Boras mismanages clients. I really do. I think that is part of the issue. I think a guy like Nolan Arenado signing the extension when he did a year before free agency, $260 million over 8 years. I think that is the wave of the future. If I'm a player or pitcher, really, I'm looking at what Nolan Arenado did and said, all right, he took the middleman out and wanted to stay where he wanted to play. Now, there are toxic situations. I don't think Bryce Harper wanted to stay in Washington. I think he wore out his welcome. I think Mike Rizzo, I think there were other parts of that. I don't think he ever was really that fond of the managers there. I think he wore out his welcome. Same goes for Machado. So they are bad examples. But like a guy like Dallas Keuchel, who, you know, didn't necessarily take, why didn't he take an extension 2 years ago? I mean, he was a Cy Young winner at one point. Why didn't he get a deal done right after the Cy Young? Because right now his market value is shit. It's not much. People aren't that excited to bring in Dallas Keuchel. You look at who's the other guy, Craig Kimbrell, who just mentioned. You know, Kimbrell is a good closer, but there's a lot of good closers out there. You can get anybody to be a closer. Why do you need Craig Kimbrell? What's Craig Kimbrell do? Is it just to have an embarrassment of riches, like if your team like Los Angeles? Is that the move? Or is it somewhere else where he can actually be the man? That's a tough thing to get. So those guys, I think Clark's a little bit overreacting with guys still left out there. I guess Adam Jones is another name of you off the top of my head where I'm like, oh yeah, he doesn't have a job yet. That's kind of crazy. So I'm not like, I am worried about baseball. I'm worried about baseball from the fact that I think a strike is coming. I don't think it's going to be pretty. I think they're really going to hurt baseball because of just how fragile right now the fan base is. If baseball goes on strike for a summer, people might just be out. People might just be like, all right, fuck it. It's fine. We'll go watch soccer. We'll go watch lacrosse. We'll go, you know, watch our team's mini camps for football. They'll go do other shit. We'll pay attention to what's going on in the NBA. Baseball in 94 could go on strike because there wasn't a lot to consume. You know, there just wasn't. Now, there's so fucking much. I'm going to go watch esports instead of watching baseball's on strike. Fuck those guys. So they don't want to become that. And they, I think, are deathly afraid of it. And yet, I don't know if the players care. It'd be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens. All right, that does it. We'll be back tomorrow with the weekend watch list. Huge college basketball weekend. We'll talk about all that. I'm sure we'll mention a little bit of Bucks Pacers from the night prior as well. Fit that into our Bucks preview. So take care, Tappers. Have yourself a great Thursday. As always, beer's on me.